We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm Giddy. How you doing? It's your boy, John of the Macri, with you for, my goodness, just elation. It is the elation podcast. It's not the Knicks Film School podcast anymore. It's the elation podcast. We're going to talk about why that is and what it means and all the good stuff. But first, I feel like it's been a while since we've spoken, even though we were on a Zoom a couple days ago and it's just been a week. But like, what a week it's been. Mr. Jeremy Cohen. Hello, sir. How are you?
Cloud nine, John. Oh my God. I can't remember the last time. Cheers. Of course. I can't remember the last time I was as amped up about a basketball game. And then I could. It was Friday when the Knicks beat the Mavs. And I couldn't remember before then. And oh yeah, it was against the Lakers before then. And what about the time? Oh yeah. You know, the Pelicans. It's just every game keeps building to this point. And the jubilation of watching this, watching a team with, granted, still like $13, $14 million in cap space and be able to do all of this by not spending money and by finding key players, lift them. And on a day where you got RJ, you know, fouling out early, Bullock later on, but the ability of Randall to continue his torrid week of revenge, Noel coming back from the brink of death with his hand, you know, all of this, Rose just being unflappable and that final play, at least in regulation on offense with the Knicks kicking it out. I mean, just all of it was so exhilarating and it's been too long. It's been too long. I love it.
It feels like it's been forever. I guess the difference between us is during 12-13, you were 18. Am I aging you correctly?
I turned 18 that year.
You turned 18 that year. So you're like exiting that. There's something that happens to you maybe because like my teenage years were in the 90s. And then as I turned, 17, 18, 19, like moved on is when they got bad. So I feel like something happens to you as a fan around those years. And maybe the same is true of you, but like, I don't know. This is a very strange feeling. I almost forgot what it was like to root for a Knick team that was not only good, but because the 12-13 team was good, and we don't have to do a whole history lesson. We have a lot of important stuff to talk about that's relevant for right now, but just very quickly, the 12-13 season was great and it was wonderful, but it was so like unique in that there was all these kind of vet, I don't want to call them mercenaries, but lack of a better word, kind of mercenary. There was
vets
nobody
to hire.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of your young, your core, like, yeah, Shump was young, but like it was an older group. It was guys who were assembled for that run, maybe one more run. And it was like there was very little time to develop a relationship with that team because they started off so hot. And it was almost from Jump Street, it was like, okay, the Knicks are a contender. Like literally within 2 weeks, it's like the Knicks are a contender. And then the rest of the season happened and they didn't win. Like this season, and I was just talking about it on the live stream, and quick shout out to anybody who wants to hear a more traditional post game, because we're going to talk big picture stuff this podcast and the week that was and all that. If you want to hear about thoughts specifically on the Pelicans game, check your feed and the pod version of the live stream that we just did, or I just did with Andrew. This feels different. This feels different. This feels there's an organicness, that's not a word, to this that is fun and has really and it was uncertain. And maybe that's a good transition to what we've just experienced this week. There was an uncertainty about all this that even today, and I want to get your impressions on the game before we talk about the week, like even today down the stretch, it's like, yeah, fuck. You know, they came out, they should have put their foot down. They didn't take it seriously in the third quarter. And now they're in a game. This is, and all the bad thoughts come in and then they do what they did. And it's just, it's been fun. So, yeah.
It really does feel like this is a year where it's kind of similar to, we've talked about this a little bit, the 2017 Yankees, where it was just like a young team with some older guys as well. But it really felt like, okay, it'll be nice if they take a step this year, come back from a really rough year the past year. And I'm not comparing, you know, we it's incomplete to compare them to a Yankees team that made it to, you know, the championship series, at least in their conference. So that's one thing, but in terms of the expectations and as you were hitting on with Vegas, the idea of how we're now well past that point, we're at what, 31 wins right now?
We are 9.5 wins above the preseason Vegas I don't say prediction because it's not a prediction. It's the number they set to get the most people to bet equally on both sides. That's what it is. But whatever it is, we're 9.5 clear of it with now 14. I'm losing track of 14 games to go. 15 games to go.
This was game 57. So yes.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. What more good things can we say about Julius Randle? I don't know. I really don't. When you look at this past week in terms of what he's done, I mean, it's just incredible. I mean, since we last talked, John, he said 4 games. Randle's played 42.2 minutes. He scored 35.8 points per game on 48.1% from the field, 45.5% from three, 83.9% from the line, 8.3 rebounds, 6.5 assists, 4.5 turnovers. You take that. You take that 100%. I mean, there were Bernard King numbers. And wasn't he the first player since King to have 40, 10, and 5 in a game?
Yep.
Albeit against the Mavericks in Dallas, revenge game. This whole revenge week for him has just been staggering. And I hope he goes in with this mindset of like, oh, I'm going to be playing in Dallas today. Or, oh, I'm going to be playing against a team that didn't really want me. That sort of, you know, that mindset will carry the Knicks so far. And so, again, like I just, the screams that I had were indicative of the play that was on the field or on the court, rather, wrong sport. but there was something that kind of also spoke to me about that Randle three that really kind of helped seal the deal at the buzzer. And especially after the Friday game.
You're talking about the three that he hit today against New Orleans?
Correct.
Oh, yeah.
The one where they had to review it.
I'm thinking buzzer. My mind automatically goes to the last play of regulation and different buzzer. But yes, the 24-second shot clock buzzer. Yes.
Yes. So Randle hitting that, and you know they had to take a look at it. Weren't sure if that went through or not. And he hit it. Knicks won. It was beautiful. And I couldn't help but right away think about the comparison or the juxtaposition of Porzingis. Specifically that Charlotte Hornets game where the ball was still on his rake ass hands because the lankiness was so ridiculous that the Knicks lost because of that.
I remember watching that game in a basement that my wife and I were renting out at the time.
Yeah. And it was crushing. And now, you know, it's exciting. And if that, to me, you know, the juxtaposition of the two, it felt like a microcosm of what's going on where it's like, you've got Randle able to get this shot in and the Knicks win, versus an era where you have Porzingis able to get the shot in, but it's too late and the Knicks lose. Yeah. And it just, it feels like a different era because it is one, but the ability to have that type of player be consistent and lead you, especially after Friday, because I, you know, I was prepared even today. I thought when RJ missed that mid-range jumper, I was like, all right, well, it was a nice streak. It was, it's great.
Yeah.
But I don't see how it's going to wind up working well. And then Elf comes into the game, like,
oh, which was really what all of us were like, well, I guess that's what I needed today.
I think he was in for about over 2 minutes and they scored 1 point.
And look, credit to, just real quick, credit to Tibbs for recognizing pretty quickly, like, this is not going well. I don't know
what the gambit was there. To the point where it was like, oh, let me put Elf into this rotation because that's what we need, is less shooting and less ability, and puts Elf in. Puts IQ in, excuse me, and everything just opens up instantly. And it's happened before. This is once again another example. Whatever, credit to Elf, at least in the first half. I thought the pass that he made to RJ for that open shot was beautiful in the first quarter. And then RJ did the same thing back to Elf in the corner later on. It was great to see that passing. Yeah. But I mean, again, like, and I'll say this as well. And I don't want to hold this. I hate looking at one game sample size and be like, see, this is where I feel. But I would say that Lonzo coming back from injury and having this one game, his performance today, lack of pull-up jumpers, not facilitating in the half court. And I know that's not his job.
This is a second game. This is a second game. Thing. So in fairness, you know.
All of this happening when Rose splits the D, goes to the hoop, and then Lonzo forgets that the team is up by three for some reason, then digs in to go get Rose. It's too late because Derrick Rose is too smart for that. Kicks it out to, I believe, Bullock, who hits the three. Game goes to overtime. Magical. That type of situation where, you know, having a drive and kick point guard be able to create that opportunity and throw off the defense and lead you to overtime and then winning, that is everything that is. So, that is a huge reason why, probably maybe the reason why the Knicks made it to overtime in the first place. So just something to consider, throw out into the ether. But great game all around.
Yeah. They didn't cave, like forget not winning this game last year. They don't win this game. I don't know, last week, last month, whatever. It's progression. But on that last play, I don't know if you saw I'm sure you saw Stan's comment at the end of in the post game, today was 7.8 seconds left. High school guys would have done what they were supposed to do. And then, Steph Bondi actually pointed out on Twitter that not only did, Eric Bledsoe not foul Derrick Rose, which they had, or they could have fouled. And, once he got inside the 3-point line, he should have done that. And then for Alonzo to close in on, off of Reggie Bullock, and then credit, all the credit in the world, Derrick Rose. That was not the first, that was not the first option, out of the timeout. It was supposed to go to Julius, but they covered it well. This is Derrick Rose said this after the game, and then, you know, obviously made it to Reggie. So great win. The week in total, we don't have to talk about it because they won the game, but if they had not won this game, I'm not sure how much of a damper this would have put on the week. I think here's the reason why I think you could have argued that it would have put a damper on the week, because there was the sense that the toughest, not that the tough part was out of the way, all the games are tough, but like the notion that they went on the road and won both of those games against a New Orleans team that, like, look, yes, the record is what it is, but this New Orleans team is not a bad team. They're not a good team. And we saw the reasons why they're not a good team today, especially down the stretch, but they're also not a bad team. To beat them in New Orleans and then to beat Dallas in Dallas, and then to start off the homestand with a loss, that's the part that would have bugged me, to start off the homestand with, because now you start off the homestand with a win, you have a little bit of wiggle room. Look, they're going to lose a game at some point pretty soon, right? But like, To take care of that business. And we haven't explicitly talked. Well, you mentioned it at the start of the show, the Dallas game. I haven't talked to you since the Dallas game. I think it's the biggest win this century. I'm just going to say it. Since the 99-2000 season. How about that? Because the 2000-2001 season, they were good, but that was after they made the the Glenn Rice, they had Glenn Rice on that team. It was three team that would look really good in the modern NBA, Rice, Houston, and Sprewell. And then they ended up falling to fourth in the playoff seeding and got beat by Toronto. And then everything happened after that. Unless you want to give me, if you want to give me a Linsanity game, but like Linsanity was a magical, but like there were still massive questions about that team. And like Melo was out and it was like in this bubble of like whatever. And then 12-13, like I said before, it was like, that's it. They were off to the races. You want to give me that very first game against Miami when they blew out the defending champion Heat? All right. But can like the first game of a season be that huge? And in terms of playoff wins, like they went up 3-0 on the Celtics and then they dragged themselves across the finish line in that series. In the Pacers series, like you want to give me like game two of the Pacers? Like, I don't know. Is there an obvious one that I'm missing? Because I think it was arguably the biggest win of the century.
I kind of lumped this one in with the Grizzlies game.
That's fair.
Of where it's like, oh, this great comeback.
The wheels were falling off on the with the Grizzlies game.
Right. Yeah. And it's almost, it's so tough to pick one, but if we are considering this season as having, let's at least say the best game of the year, I have to think it was this past Friday against the Mavericks, just based on the circumstances, the narrative, everything with Porzingis. You've got a Mavericks team that I want to say was 21-10 in their last 31 games, doing great stuff.
Sixth in net rating since the All-Star break. And I'll look it up right now. Keep talking. Since they started off, it was 8-14. They've been one of the best teams in the league, but I'll look it up right now. Keep going.
Yeah. And so then having that ability to go into that building, you're without Alec Burks, who is a huge part of what you do. I think also the Pelicans, you know, they're not a good team. So the fact of beating them beforehand in New Orleans versus Dallas came into New York. The game was there for the taking. Randall played like crap. Supporting talent around him just wasn't there. And the game slipped away. And the fourth quarter woes, I think the Knicks scored 6 points in the first 6 minutes of the game, something along those lines. So really, really just tough stuff. And it made for a great redemption game, in my opinion. And being able to do that, stick it out towards the end, having that kind of, not so much commanding, but affirming lead in the fourth quarter, and then just slowly but surely making it more and more fascinating. You also have the previous game, you know, Luka had made that incredible floater for three, which is one of the greatest shots I've seen in a long time.
Oh my God. I watched that fucking shot live.
Yeah. But you know, the ability as well to force Luka to take control, and he wasn't able to do that. I mean, he put up incredible numbers. I think at one point he had like 17 points and 16 assists, but there's something about with getting young stars, especially in the West, because, you know, I mean, the East it's good talent, but it's not nearly as good as what the West has, and being able to beat them where they're comfortable, that really resonates for me. So listen, I'll take all of these games, today, Friday, all the games on the winning streak, the Grizzlies game, I'll take them all. But there's something kind of magical about Friday from a revenge standpoint. And today was a little bit more magical in the sense of like, wow, so this team continues to fight back. And even though against all those good teams that they lost by, you know, a few points,
think about
the ability to
both
stay
net
in
games,
it.
Both net games, the Sixers game. It's just, yeah. And they didn't let go of the rope. When's the last time this team let go of the rope in a game? I guess it's the Milwaukee game to come out of the break, right? I don't think there's been one since then, right?
Nothing that immediately comes to, unless, you know, the Dallas game, the first one.
You know what? Their offense took a dump in that first Dallas game, but they were,
yes. But
I don't know
still,
that
it was right there. It was right there, and it was like, no, we're just gonna let you have it, Dallas. And it just got to double digits, and
I think
there
was a 3-point game in the beginning of the fourth quarter. So like, whatever. But that's good call though. By the way, the Mavericks eighth in net rating over the last 2 months at +5.0. Tied actually with the Bucks, who I guess are a smidgen above them because they're ranked seventh, Clippers sixth, 5.3, Nets fifth, 5.5. So they're like right in that group of the 5, 6, 7, 8 range. They beat a good team on the road, and all the credit in the world. So that's a good transition to moving forward and what's coming up. And I think it's tough to talk about what's coming up without really just appreciating what they've just done. Cause in with the win streak now, I don't want to say the priorities of the season have changed, but there's something has changed, right? And as we look forward and we think about what is at stake and what is realistic and what is possible and what is fair to expect, maybe is that the way to put it? How does all that not shift over the last 10 days? It feels like it has to. So as we're looking at the week ahead, when they are playing again, all three games are at home, Charlotte, Atlanta, and Toronto. Charlotte is a team missing its two best players, or at least its two most impactful players this season in Ball and Hayward. Then Atlanta has been playing extraordinarily well for about a month and a half now. I want to say they're now 17-5 in their last 22 games, I think, because they beat the Pacers. We're recording this on Sunday. They beat them earlier today. And they've been banged up and they're still a little banged up, but they do have Trae Young. So do you call the Atlanta game a must win game? I don't think so, especially since the Knicks already have the tiebreaker. And then there's Toronto, who is still in the play in race, thanks to the Bulls just not really looking like an NBA team for most of the last month.
Decade.
But pot calling.
We'll black. Call five, 6 years. Decade.
Yeah, it's fair. A while. You always fear Toronto. I always fear Toronto at least. And we'll see, who plays in that game because they're resting a lot of guys. But I'm going to ask you two different questions. What is your expectation for, I guess, if you want to do the next three games, I guess we'll do our predictions a little early. But if you want to lump in the two that come after that, because it's, I feel like this homestand is kind of one, holistic thing. The two that come after the Toronto game are Phoenix at home and Chicago at home. Like, what's your expectation and what do you think is like reasonable for like the consensus expectation for the team as we move forward?
Sky's the limit, baby. I mean, well, think about it. Cause at least we went into the season and I'm pretty sure you said you thought 25 wins was going to be around where they were. And I think I said 24 or 26.
I think I predicted 20. I'm saying I predicted 28. That's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Fair enough. 25, 28.
Yo, wait, I have it right here. You said for 82 games, your prediction was 32 wins.
Right. But we're doing 72.
So, but that was your prediction for 82. So
I thought I had less, but I'll take it.
Maybe you changed it after
I don't think
you got down to it.
It would have been worse for my behalf. So I'll stick with yours because it makes me look much more astute. So I'll take it. I think that if this week had gone worse, it would have been all right. Well, at this point, it's going to be a play-in tournament. We know they're not going to fall further than about 10th. So that's what we're dealing with. Yeah. And that's fine. Just stay healthy. And now, we're looking at, I think, a half a game out, right, from fifth place.
So right now, they are Atlanta, as we said, they're in fourth. They're 8.5 games back, tied with Boston. So both Atlanta and Boston are 8.5 games back of first. Boston does not play today. They do, however, play tomorrow against Chicago. So interesting game there. And then the Knicks are 9 back. So a half game back of both Atlanta and Boston. And currently, 2 full games up above the Miami Heat, your defending Eastern Conference champions, who also do not play today.
The Heat? They're playing right now.
Oh, they are playing right now. Sorry. They were all the way at the top of my front of my scoreboard. Sorry about that.
So Heat currently have a 2-point lead over the Nets after three quarters.
I'm looking at it right now. So I don't think that game's going to finish by the time we stop recording. But so it's either going to be a game and a half lead over Miami or a 2.5 game lead over Miami.
Yeah.
Wow. What a world.
And we've talked about this scary 6-game road trip for a while now. And if you can capitalize on the 5 home games, right? 5 home games.
Five more.
That you have here. Even if you, if you have a winning record in them, then things are going to bode well for you.
I would assign for 4-2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In terms of, for the next five?
I would have signed before today, before the Pelicans game, coming off of the Dallas win in Dallas and the Pelicans win in New Orleans, I would have signed happily for 4-2 on the homestand. I will still sign I think this is what I was getting at with you. I think I'll still sign for 4-2 on the homestand. But part of me is like, why can't we fuck around and go 5-1? Like
6-0. Let's do that. You know,
let's beat Phoenix. Let's beat the best team in the league over the last 2.5 months.
Sure, why not? So, I guess that's where I'm at. Where it's kind of just like at this point, just keep winning. Just keep focusing on the winning, because the ability to get into even that top six, where you can. But this is also where I'm grappling, right? Because I feel like if you can't get to 4-5, and it's definitely possible. Don't get me wrong. But
it is.
If 4-5 can't be where you wind up, in some ways, 6 is not the place I want to be, because the team that worries me the most in the playoffs is actually the Bucks.
Are you serious?
I actually think so. Yeah. Because
they were.
I understand the first game and the second game, or the first and the third games, you know, first seemed like an anomaly. Third game was without their best stars. And it's hard. Looking at that second game, it's hard not to see that as a seasoned team just steamrolling whoever they face, be it, you know, whichever team that will be. That's what concerns me more. Whereas even if it's wrong, just in my heart, how I feel about it in terms of these teams. And I know regular season and the postseason, they're different beasts.
Yeah, but, especially with that team and that coach.
Right. But it's just, I guess the main thing here is, looking at how the Knicks have done, I'm not scared of anyone. I may feel more or less confident versus one opponent or another, but there's not really a team in the conference where I feel like I'm absolutely terrified of playing them, because I think they will obliterate the Knicks. I think they could still beat the Knicks 4 or 5 games. Don't get me wrong, but I feel like the Knicks would have a puncher's chance in them. But there's something about the Bucks where
I don't feel that way against Philly.
I feel less confident. Not saying I have no confidence. It's just, it's less.
I don't feel that way against Philly. I don't think the Knicks could. If Philly's fully healthy and Embiid is specifically Embiid, because Embiid is, he was going to be the MVP before he got hurt. Now he's not going to be. It's going to be Jokic. But like, that dude is playing at an MVP
out of his
level.
Mind. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the offense. The offense isn't really flowing for Philadelphia. The defense isn't flowing for Brooklyn. And Milwaukee, I think, is top 10 in offensive and defensive.
They are, but I don't know. Maybe it's just because I'm coming off watching them in the category of things Jonathan does when he should be sleeping. I was watching them last night come up. Against the Grizzlies. Like, they didn't show up against the Grizzlies last night. And again, but that's not an anomaly. Like, there have been a lot of games this year where the Bucks just like, and I'm not talking about the games where they're sitting one of their stars. And by the way, against the Grizzlies, they had all of their guys, but like, they are, aside from those top three guys who, and I trust Middleton a lot. I think Middleton's really good, but like, if you could figure out a way to fluster Giannis, and I understand that's a big, massive if. I'm sorry, that team doesn't scare me nearly as much as Philly, or nearly as much as, excuse me, a fully healthy Brooklyn team, which again, I could look out the window and Bigfoot could walk by my house right now. That's possible, just like it is possible we will get a fully healthy Brooklyn team this year. Who knows? But I don't know. I don't fear the Bucks as much as you. So the point is, I would very much like to have the 6 seed. And if we could get to 4 or 5, though, that would be cool too. But I actually might fear Boston more than Milwaukee. Let's do a progress report, because I think there are some good players to briefly talk about here, and then we'll do some discussion topics, and then we'll get to predictions. So, progress report. I don't know that there's a ton to say about the young players from this week. I think RJ Barrett had some very, very nice moments, specifically in the Dallas game in the fourth quarter. He did not have his best game today. He did have 18 points on like decent efficiency, but he was tossing the ball all over the place. He struggled on defense, especially coming out in the third quarter against Eric Bledsoe. But I think, you know, the train keeps moving along with RJ Barrett. Any specific thoughts on RJ from the week that we just saw?
Positive. 100% positive. Yeah. You know, I mean, today seemed not as encouraging. It was almost the opposite of what he usually does, which is where it feels like he builds and becomes more effective as the game goes on. And yeah, it was kind of the opposite today. So, you know, fouled out, certainly unfortunate, yet it seemed like in a lot of ways the Knicks didn't really skip a beat towards, you know, especially down the stretch once Quickly came in. But I would have loved to have seen RJ in there for sure. But, you know, that's just that he's still a young player. He's still going to have games that look great, and he's going to have games that are just like, we can forget about this. And especially considering the last time the Knicks and the Pelicans played, that was certainly a game for RJ to forget. It was nice to see him rise to the occasion even a bit more this time against his old buddy Zion.
Yeah. And the nice thing is he's important to this team, and we're going to actually get to how important he's on this team in a bit. But like when he went out, that's the thing. When he went out with the foul trouble, I wasn't, and this is a good transition to talk about Emmanuel Quickly. Quickly's in there. I know he struggled of late. I have all the confidence in the world in Emmanuel Quickly. And I know he missed a floater that could have been the game with whatever it was under 20 seconds left. I think might have been even a lot less than that. It was under 20 seconds left. But you love to see him in the game in those situations. You love to see Tibbs trusting him in this game down the stretch, as he should have, because I think that's the nice thing about having Emmanuel Quickly is he is a rookie that you can put in big situations. He's going to be a slight liability on defense here or there, maybe, but I thought he held his own. And I thought he gave them 22 really good minutes today, even though he was only 1 for 5, because, hey, got to the free throw line, ended up with 8 points. And I don't necessarily think his plus 24 in 22 minutes was a complete misnomer. So good game from Quickly. And I think overall struggles of late from Quickly, but I'm not worried about him either.
It didn't even feel like he had played 22 minutes until you mentioned it.
No,
didn't. Something about it where it's just like, oh, I guess he's kind of just there. But yeah. Yes. And I don't mean that in a negative sense. Just
well, his impact is muted when he's not scoring. Right. Let's just call it like it is.
Exactly. But yeah, you know, I mean, as you said, the miss floater was unfortunate, but the Knicks were able to create opportunities because he was in the game to begin with. So that was positive. Again, it feels so weird when he misses free throws, but he hit the next one. And then I believe he went to the line afterwards and hit that too. So it worked out. His ability to just create opportunities, as I mentioned, that is what's so key about him and why just taking Elf out and putting him in down the stretch was the clear cut difference between a disappointing loss. And honestly, you know, I would have, because you mentioned like how we would have felt if the Knicks had lost this game against the Pelicans. I was really mad at the idea of, you know, even with 5-game winning streak beforehand and seeing it snapped, just anger at the referees for calling 2 times as many fouls on the Pelicans as the Knicks. And I get it. The Pelicans are 3rd in free throw rate. The fact that they do so well in the paint and with offensive rebounds, it's going to lead to contact and they're going to get to the line. I understand.
Adams
all
is a fucking beast. Yeah,
he is. And this is also the two things that came to mind were, number one, not having Mitch. That was a huge factor in terms of the boxing out, the defensive boards. I know towards the end, even Ryan Rocco, I was watching ESPN to see what kind of coverage the Knicks were getting.
I didn't know the game was on MSG until overtime. Delora was like, people are saying on Twitter that the game's on MSG. I'm like, no, it's not. And then of course I changed the channel and it's on MSG. I felt like such an idiot anyway.
But yeah, you know, I mean, he had one great box out towards the end that Ryan Rocco even talked about. And that definitely caught my eye as well. But not having Mitch there, I think plays a huge part in how you defend the paint and how you collect your rebounds, boxing out, but also not having Burks. That seemed to be a huge factor at some point, not having him in that lineup towards the end, where instead you are maybe putting an Elf at all, or maybe you're putting in Quickly. Burks cooks during that time historically. So at least this season. Yeah. But you know, I mean, that's all of those things where why I was going to be so mad on this pod and like, yeah, the 5 games are great. Love those wins, but this one got away. This felt like a trap game. And we don't have to say any of that shit because they won.
I don't say
any of that.
I'm happy I don't get mad Jeremy. I don't like mad Jeremy. I don't think we need to say anything about OB. OB had another week in a rookie season that he's probably going to want to forget. Kevin Knox and Frank Ntilikina got some time today. They also got some time earlier this week. Nice to see them making an appearance. I think Frank's minutes were a little better than Kevin Knox's, but I don't think. Do we need to talk about them? Let's talk about Nerlens Noel, specifically in the context of how valuable he is. And then we'll finish up. We'll touch on Julius Randle All NBA real quick, and then we'll we will finish up. So it looked like for a brief minute there, Nerlens Noel was going to go down for the count. He was holding his hand in pain after he tried to block a shot. Went out, came back in the same game, had for the second game in a row just absolutely as big a block as you could imagine a player having at the rim. The one on Friday was against Dorian Finney-Smith. This one was on Brandon Ingram. Just like you can watch a whole season worth of games and never see a block nearly as good as either of the ones he had in the last two games. And it got me thinking, how valuable is he on this team right now? If I had to rank the top five most valuable Knicks, where would he rank, or would he hit in the top five? So I'm going to do this first, and then I'll turn to you. I'm doing this off the cuff. I am making this up as I go along, but I am making it up as from an informed opinion because I have watched Knicks basketball this year. All right. Julius Randle, number one. No disagreement there, right?
Zero.
Okay. After this, we're going to have some.
So well, I mean, I feel like Norvell Pell has an argument, but I don't know if it's a concrete one.
I'm doing this list, by the way, of how I feel from right now, like starting today, moving forward. Like, who are the most important Knicks moving forward starting today?
Well, as opposed to how the season has gone? Because we can't predict the future.
Well, I know we can't predict
the future. Right, so how can we say that they're indispensable in the future when we don't know what the future is?
I'm not it's about how I feel about how indispensable the player is right now. I'm obviously taking into account everything they've done, but here's why I'm going back and forth on this. Cause I think you would have asked me at one point, is Emmanuel Quickley the second most important player on this team? I would have said, yes, he has struggled of late. I think maybe he's hit the rookie wall a little bit, and I don't know that we could depend on him as much as we did earlier in the year. So I don't know that Emmanuel Quickley is going to be second on my list right now. That's what I mean.
Yeah. I guess I was thinking more in the lines of like, based on what we've seen,
yes,
as of now.
Of course, it's based on what... Yeah, okay, all right. Should I start some shit?
Go for it.
No.
Do it.
No. You know why? Because here's the thing. His three-point shooting has become their most dangerous weapon. So RJ Barrett is second. I was thinking about putting Rose above RJ. That was my conflict. Because I think so little of Elfrid Payton in big spots, and I think so highly of Rose in big spots, as we saw today, and I think they're going to need Rose to play 25 to 30 minutes of like really good basketball for them to have a chance to win games against good teams. So that's why I was like, this is not shade on RJ, but like, as we saw today, they have guys you could put in there to play the wing. They can't do all the things that RJ could do, but Reggie Bullock can do some things like hit pick threes. Alec Burks can do some things. Emmanuel Quickley can do some things. Frank Ntilikina can do some things. They don't have a lot of point guards. Okay. RJ second, Rose third.
We're boring, by the way, because I also agree that RJ has to go second, and then Rose has to be third, just based on how he has transformed. Not you know, staggeringly so, but just increased the ability of this offense since coming here in the first place. The fact that there is not really a consistent full-time lead guard, so what he's been able to do, especially in first halves this year.
Yeah.
I mean, today was the perfect example of, and even the Dallas game, just the ability to get out and build a lead in the second quarter. Now it's on the team to hold that lead, which in both games didn't really happen. So something's got to be, you know, Knicks have to come out of the gate a little bit more. But, you know, that sort of thing where I do agree. I think you get RJ second, you get Rose third. We're equal there.
I have five names I'm considering for the last two spots.
Well, can I go first then?
Go for
mine forward. All right. So I think the fourth person I'm going to say, it probably has to be Alec Burks.
He's one of the five names I'm considering.
Yeah. I think just the ability of how he's able to score, especially in important moments. And I also shout out to Terry of Terry and Trey. I cannot think of Alec Burks the same way after he tweeted how Burks is like a superstar that was baked for 73% and then let out after that. And it's just so perfect, Terry. It's
now
wonderful.
Now I want cookies.
Oh, yeah. So having someone like that who's able to take over when things matter, and, you know, the fact that Tibbs has him or had him even running spot minutes at the point, that just shows the glaring hole that is there and the ability for the Knicks to cover that by playing Burks. And hopefully they don't have to, you know, worry about that next year because there is an upgrade at the point. But
yeah, we're talking about right now, though.
But right now he has helped mask what I think is the biggest deterrent, or at least the biggest detriment for this team in their on ball creation, and that's key. So he's got to be fourth for me.
This is bad podcasting because I'm going to agree with you, and I'm going to put Burks fourth as well. You made a good case, and it's a strong case. And so now for the fifth spot, it's Bullock, Quickly, Taj, or Noel. And I know I brought up this topic because of Noel, but I actually think Noel and Taj kind of cancel each other out for this spot, because if we lost one of them, we would have the other one available to play like 30 minutes. And so really it's a question of like, how am I going to survive the other 18 minutes? And I feel like we could survive the other 18 minutes between Norvell Pell and Julius Randle playing some center. So all due respect to Nolan Noel, love the blocks. Love you. Thank you for making me think of this topic. You're not getting on my list. Taj, the all-time GOAT, not getting on my list. So then it comes down to Reggie Bullock and Emmanuel Quickly for me. And man, I can't believe I'm doing this, because again, I would have put Quickly second on this list at one point this year. I'm putting Bullock fifth in my fifth spot because of the defense and because of the reliability to hit three-point shots and the two-man game with Randle. So Reggie's my number five.
I'm going to disagree with you on this one. If not for the sake of disagreement in general, because us going down the list one through five with the same list would be boring.
Andrew's seething in the background.
I am going to put Noel fifth. And again, you know, I mean, Mitch was doing a great job. I know offensively speaking, it wasn't maybe the leap that a lot of people were looking for him to take, but the ability to have a defensive backbone and someone to really anchor the rim and show no fear whatsoever going up for blocks, consistently. I mean, look, his hands are atrocious on offense. I think we know this. And when he went down and was holding his hand, I was thinking like, all right, I mean, he's just going to swat shit anyway. It's like, it's not like he needs a hand on offense.
He could be like a quarterback in football, or like an offensive lineman or whatever.
Jason Pierre-Paul after a fireworks injury, just billy clubbing his way with
literally
his arm.
Just don't need that,
right? It's, you know, just go up with it, just punch the ball, whatever you got to do.
Oh my god, we're terrible people.
But no, you know, just Jonathan Wasserman had a great article on Noel recently for Bleacher Report, just pointing out how good he has been. So I think that if I didn't include some sort of center, I guess, just in so many ways, I agree that it's kind of a next man up philosophy. So the idea of maybe he's not as integral to what's going on, I could understand that. But what would happen if there were no Nerlens Noel? You would have Taj. And yes, I know what you're saying in terms of like, you get Julius and Pell to do spot minutes, but I don't know if you could really get Norvell Pell to play significant minutes for as long as we have.
That's going to get you canceled.
That's that. You know what? I'm willing to take it. And I hate myself for saying it, but I had to say it.
It's cancelable.
That's fair. Taj, I mean, again, he has been so productive, but
yeah,
I don't know if how he would be in a starter's role consistently as we go on for, you know, weeks on end.
I know how he would be in a closer's role because we've seen him close games.
Sure. But how do you even get to the point where you're closing well if you don't have someone to hold down the fort minutes?
Look, I'm not trying to disparage Nerlens Noel. The last thing I will say is, if we had played this game I don't remember when Mitch was healthy, but when Mitch was healthy, before he got hurt the first time, Mitch would have made both of our lists handily. And
sure,
in retrospect, I don't know that would have been correct.
But the other funny part is, I mean, some of the conversation back in preseason, which was admittedly still kind of ridiculous, was the idea of, is Mitch going to start?
When are our conversations not ridiculous?
Sure. But I mean, the general discourse was like, is Mitch going to start over Noel? That sort of idea. And it quickly was, no, Mitch is the better player and he should be getting the starter's minutes. But, you know, with Mitch going down with a freak injury where he hits his hand on Julius's head and then him coming back and just getting injured, and I think that like a fifth of the league is still hurt. So clearly there's a problem going on with the NBA in terms of these player and player health. And it really sucks because you want to see the best talent out there, but.
Well, just look at the MVP race. The MVP race is in shambles because of health situation.
Basically. Yeah. And also, I mean, speaking of that, this past week with the conversation and taking it away from Jokic, Jokic deserves to be MVP.
Yeah, he does. Oh, he no, I'm not.
No, arguing. I know you're not saying this otherwise. Yeah. Just other people brought this up. And to me, it was ridiculous because
it's a stupid argument.
A big factor is being healthy. And if you're not healthy, then you're not playing. And if you're not playing, then that should take away from your achievements because it's a marathon, not a sprint. So if you're sprinting highly, then you should be able to carry that on through the whole race. But, you know, that sort of thing. And Noel has been, to kind of bring it all home, Noel has been that marathon guy. He has been
a marathon man, you might say.
Marathon man. Perfect. I love it.
A movie I've never seen. I don't know if Andrew was is ashamed of me for that. Have you seen Marathon Man?
He hasn't seen it either. So
he hasn't? Have you seen Marathon
Man? I have not.
Okay. It's a Dustin Hoffman picture, if I recall. Different than The Running Man. The Running Man's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Marathon and different Man's than Blade Runner as well, which is a very different movie.
We're not off the rails.
No. We're blade running in the direction that we have to.
What is blade running?
I don't know.
Okay. Speaking of the MVP race and guys staying healthy and that factoring in and all of the things, Julius Randle's not going to win the MVP this year. He shouldn't win the MVP this year.
Wow. I got canceled for Norville Pelle, and you just said Julius Randle shouldn't win the MVP this year.
I know. Obi Toppin apparently thinks he should. I don't know if you watched that hype video. I wanted to run
through a wall after that. I wanted to marathon man my way through a wall.
There you go. Exactly.
Play run through a wall. There it is. Took me a second. But I got there.
How about Blade Scaler? We scaled it.
How about a Blade Fast Walker? Blade Jogger? You know. Now we're off the rails.
Now we're done.
Now we're off the rails. Now
thank you, Andrew.
Okay.
Thank you,
Andrew. What I was going to say before is the fact that we, I think, can have the conversation that we just had about the five most indispensable, and it would have been this in preseason and X in 2 weeks in and a different thing a month later, is a testament to just how good Julius Randle has been and how important he's been. And how everything this team does centers around him, and that really he's the only indispensable player on this team when push comes to shove. And to the topic you just brought up in terms of health, I'm going to lean on a tweet that I had from before the game. So this number has gone up because he played 47 fucking minutes today. Going into this game, Randall was first in the league in minutes, 2,083. I'm assuming Giannis, LeBron, and Kawhi are going to get all NBA spots because I don't think we need to talk about why they're going to get all NBA spots. They're going to get all NBA spots. Here is Randall in comparison to his competitors for all NBA spots at forward. And again, remember there are six of these. So if we take out Giannis, LeBron, and Kawhi, there's three left. Jason Tatum, 12th in the league in minutes at 1,816. Zion Williamson, 39th in the NBA in minutes, 1,677. Paul George, 81st in the NBA in minutes, 1,450. So trails Julius Randle by more than 600 minutes. And finally, Jimmy Butler, who the advanced stats love. He's, I think, 6th in VORP. I think he's up there in Winchester. So he's very, very high in all the advanced stats. 106th in minutes coming into today, 1,383, exactly 800 minutes behind Julius Randle. I don't know how you are supposed to have an All-NBA conversation and not factor into the fact that the most important player for the most surprising team never fucking gets off the court and doesn't miss games. So I don't know who it's going to be over. But if I'm sitting here right now and saying, should Julius Randle make an All-NBA team? Yes, Julius Randle should make an All-NBA team. And I'm starting to get to the place to think where it's not even a conversation. He needs to be in there. So there you go.
Yeah. You know, listen, I think that if you miss 30% of your season, you probably shouldn't be considered for an All-NBA spot. That's just my philosophy. I think, yes, I can understand the heavy minutes. I can understand an incredible impact. And this is how I feel in terms of LeBron James. And I understand, obviously, that he is the greatest player on the planet, arguably. Maybe less so than a couple of years ago, but still top 10.
Luke is coming.
But the point is, even if he's played 41 games so far, even if he gets 9 under his belt before the end of the season, I'm sorry, but I just don't understand how, especially when the Lakers are able to do what they are doing without him, and they're doing a fantastic job.
So you think Randle potentially should get a spot over LeBron?
I mean, when you say it like that, it sounds blasphemous, obviously. No, I know. But the idea of it, you have to play. And if you're not playing significant minutes, significant games, and your team is able to kind of like chug along, then I think that should be considered. That should be a factor in some degree.
Well, they haven't fallen out of it, the Lakers. They're seven. They've won now 7 games without him. They play tomorrow against Utah or today as you're listening to this. Right. So, yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. It's that the team itself is very good. I mean, they're elite with him and with Anthony Davis. But they've managed without him. And I'm not saying that they could do anything in the playoffs without those two stars. Obviously, they couldn't. But if we are basing a regular season award on the regular season, and you look at a player like Julius Randle, who has missed
one game
due to a contusion in his thigh, and the other games...
That his own fucking teammate.
Right, exactly. It seems that all the worst injuries by the Knicks are friendly fire, unfortunately. But
yes,
nonetheless, having Julius Randle play those games, and even the games after where he was hurt and he looked to be a bit sluggish as a result, it's like, all right, well, what is better for Randle's case? The fact that he played in all these games except for one so far, or the fact that he, you know, was a marathon man and that was not intentional, but I'll take it, able to hurt his, you know, even though his play suffered and he's playing, or should he have just sat out? Because if we're talking about not playing games,
he still helped them. He's never not helped this team when he's been on the court this year.
Exactly. Well, I'm saying individually, from an individual standpoint, there were a couple games after that.
He struggled, but I think they were still, even the Dallas game where he went, what was he, 5 for 20? Like, I would argue that he was a more helpful force on the court than a not helpful force.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And so not having him there, in my opinion, would be far more problematic. And the fact that he's able to show up in these games, and even if they're not as stellar of a performance, ability is the most important, or availability is the most important ability. And so, you know, like and this isn't just me taking a shot at LeBron. Any other player that is going to miss significant time, their contributions have to be, in my opinion, impactful and also from a greater duration. Like LaMelo Ball, I think, will have also played 41 minutes or 41 games this year. Is that a different philosophy? I mean, he was the clear rookie of the year front runner.
Yeah.
But now you compare him to someone like Tyrese Halliburton, who did not have a better season, but at least had a longer season that was very good. How do we consider that? Or Anthony Edwards, who was really bad for the first 2 months, got his act together, is doing a fantastic job now, was recently named as the rookie of the month.
For a team that has absolutely no consequences to any game they play.
Right. And that's the other thing. Rookie of the year awards don't matter in terms of how the teams do. They just look at the best individual rookie.
Well,
when you look at players, all NBA,
but I think it
Michael Carter Williams won.
Yeah, it's true.
Rookie of the year, and he peaked in his first game of his career.
Yeah, but he was helpful. You're right. You're 100% right. I was wrong on that. He was helpful to his team when he was out there for most of this year, up until the last month or so. Anthony Edwards was like really hurting his team when he was out there. And over the last month, you could make the argument that he's being helpful.
Right.
I that was more what I should have focused on, but you're 100% right.
Yeah. So when you consider all that, and we saw Zion today, right? We saw how dynamic he can be as a player. And I can't tell you how many times I have heard the like, oh, he's the second player to have 25 plus points per game and 60% since Kevin McHale.
Two players have gone head to head now twice, and Julius Randle is the better. It's clear if you watch the games that maybe it is a small margin, but it's not disputable. Julius Randle's the better player of the two this year.
And I mean, let's face it. A lot of this is also potentials baked into it.
Of course.
You have the largest market, arguably, in the NBA versus the smallest market in the NBA. And yet we have something where it's staggering in terms of necessarily how it's covered. Or, we've had this conversation in the Strickland Slack channel before in terms of like, does the media hate the Knicks, or are they just covering them because they've been bad? And so they've been reflecting that as such. And I think it is somewhere in the middle for sure. But this idea of where after Friday's game, it was Luka Magic, not Julius Randle Magic. It was Luka Magic. And and look, I'm okay with that. It's more just the factor of we love young stars because of the potential.
Yes.
And yet we as like, This sounds like
very young in air quotes because Julius Randle's 26 years old, which isn't old.
So. Right. And yeah. I know this is going to sound a little ridiculous and like faux patriotic, but it's like, this is the country of second chances. So like if Julius Randle can't have a second chance to resurrect his career to the point where he is a legitimately top 20 NBA player, and hopefully that carries over into the next season, we can, you know, like if we can see his peak increase while he's entering his prime, that says something. But it's like, you're telling me that with all this being considered, it's like, yeah, he had a good enough season, but it's not there. Because we talk about how, you know, there was a conversation of, well, Julius shouldn't be in the All-Star game. Julius shouldn't be considered for the most improved player award because he's not young enough to get that award.
No,
he
and
shouldn't
that was
be an All-NBA player because there are players who are better than him, even though they're not playing games. All of it is bullshit to me. That's the thing. It's like, again, and like, you know, you don't want to see me mad, but this is something I'm mad about.
I love this.
Because,
I like,
because again, like so many of us were eager to kick him to the curb last year and he transformed his entire game. He used this opportunity. He used 9 months to get in shape, recreate who he was and turn into a player that we saw only glimmers of. We don't call him Beyblade anymore because he's smart enough to kick it out and to look for, he draws the double team and likes to pass it out and reaps the benefits from the assists because sharing is caring. And when both of you can contribute, that's nicer than just you contributing. So with all of that being said, I know he's most likely not going to be all NBA. And I know some people are worried about the contract situation in terms of what happens, but it doesn't matter because Julius Randle was not acquired by the Knicks within his rookie contract and he wasn't drafted by the Knicks. So he's not going to get a 35% max. The most he would get is a 30% max anyway.
Which is still a lot of money.
Of course, it absolutely is. But with all of that being said, it's just, I feel for Julius because at points, like, I don't know what more he can really do. Unless there's like another legitimate bona fide star who is better than him on the team that brings in all of this excitement. It's like, oh, well, you know, the Knicks have, you know, this great player. Like, let's say just because he's a free agent, Kawhi, right? If the Knicks survive the odds of 99.9% of luring him away from his hometown area and getting him, then you're going to see like, oh, Julius Randle is much more respected because he's playing with Kawhi Leonard and RJ Barrett is a beast and he's going to be blossoming. And instead it's just like the Knicks have done a nice job. That's great. It's really awesome. And I'm glad he's doing well, but I mean, come on, look at these other players. So he'll get his time, but it's not right now. And I just think that's bullshit.
Well, very, very well said. Two quick things. One, I want to make very clear. The reason I put LeBron, Giannis and Kawhi, in that, because they're going to get voted in, not necessarily that I would agree with that. I think there is a very legitimate conversation that could take place because LeBron's going to miss potentially close to 30 games this season. That's one. Number two, the thing that you're talking about, and you very eloquently phrased it in terms of like this kind of like just because, like, well, clearly Julius Randle's not as good as a player as this player. Like, that needs to come up with the All-NBA conversation with Paul George. Because I've kind of been operating under the assumption all season, well, the Clippers are a top four seed. Paul George is on the team. Paul George is putting up these numbers. He's going to get a spot. And at this point, it's like, we'll know, because like Julius Randle, what he's actually producing and what he means to this team. And let's just call it like it is. If Julius Randle was traded for some pick in the preseason and Obi Toppin was getting Julius Randle's minutes and he was being backed up by Kevin Knox, are they the worst team in the league? Are they the third worst team in the league? Are they the fifth worst team in the league? They are one of the worst teams in the league. I personally don't think there's any dispute about that. I may get some pushback from people who are like, no, RJ Barrett will pick up the slacks and, you know, mind him quick.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And this and that. I don't see it. Tibbs says it after every game and before every game. Randall is our engine. He's our engine. Everything we do revolves around him. And he's not wrong. So
he's not a sidekick. He's not a sidekick like a Paul George is. That's the other thing. And then, and of course, that's the other argument where if you do get Kawhi, it's like, well, yeah, I mean, he's impressive, but you got Kawhi. Kawhi is your engine now. So Julius does a great job, but he's a second banana. But no.
No, completely agree. Okay. Prediction and then producer corner, and then we'll get out of here. Because we talked about the record and where this team is going in terms of like expectations and all that. So cover that. Okay. Who goes first?
You do. For both.
I go first. Oh yes, of course I go first because I'm the optimist. Okay. So I'm going to take the easy way out. Again, we said it before, but we'll say it again. Three home games: Charlotte, Atlanta, Toronto. I am taking the easy way out, and I'm going 2-1.
All right. I'm going to go 3-0, which means they'll go 0-3, which means I'm sorry.
I hope you're right. I hope you win and add to your, I don't know. We should probably go back and see like who actually has more weekly wins. I think it's probably you.
It is me, but I don't have the numbers, but that's okay. Well, we can start next year if you want.
We could, we can, right, and we will.
Yeah.
Okay. Andrew, you want
to wait? We have 10.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. And you won that too.
Holy shit. Okay. Wow.
I've got it for you if you'd like.
Although I have it right here.
All
right. So Charlotte, Atlanta, Toronto, last two home games, Phoenix, Chicago. And then the next five are on the road: Houston, Memphis, Denver, Phoenix, Clippers. Should we just do the rest of the season?
We can.
Yeah.
We can do the rest of the season. Sure.
Clippers, Lakers on the road. And then the last three games, San Antonio, Charlotte, and Boston. So 14 games. You're wrong. It's 14 games, not 15. I am predicting that this team will go 8-6.
That was going to be mine.
I know. Don't say I never did anything for you.
Well, you didn't.
I know. I
mean, at least not there. But
that's what I'm saying. Don't say it.
Well, now I won't. 8-6. All right. Damn, you have boxed me into quite the corner here, sir. Quite the corner indeed. Well, it's tough because I just said 3-0, which would then mean that they...
Do it. Just do it. Do it.
Ah. All right. But I'm saying if I do 7-7, then that means I'm basically saying...
I'm not saying do that. I'm saying go 9-5.
You're baiting me.
I am.
Because you know deep down. Because if you thought 9-5 were realistic, you would have picked 9-5.
I thought about 9-5, and it came down to where else are they getting a win on the West Coast trip? I mean, and I say that even like, I think they're going to win the Houston game, and I'm assuming they're going to win another game on the West Coast trip. And I don't even know where that win's going to come from, but I'm assuming they'll find a win somewhere. And I'm basically saying to you, or unless you think they're going to end the season 3-0 on the homestand.
I'm going to say 9-7. Now, the reason I'm going to say that's 16. I'm going to say 9-5. I'm going to say that because I feel good about the homestand that's coming up.
Okay.
Houston's tanking. Memphis was competitive, but I think that's anyone's game. The four other games are pretty rough, but the Spurs just got fined for tanking. So if they're going to be in a play-in game, I could see them, you know, wink, wink. One of our guys is hurt again, and the Hornets are probably going to be in the same boat. So I'm going to stick with 9-5. I'm probably going to regret it, but that's okay.
Listen, that's all right. Life is full of regrets. It's how you recover from them. Okay, now we're going to go to producer corner with Andrew Claudio. Hello, Andrew.
Hi, guys. Jeremy, I'll bail you out. The Knicks are going to go 11-3 down the
stretch. Oh, yeah.
If the Knicks fucking go 11-3, oh, my God.
They're figuring something out. I'm done underestimating this team's ceiling. And, you know, there's a hoodie over my shoulder that has magic powers. I'm not going to stop talking about it. The moment I put it on the hook, the Knicks came back in that Memphis game, and here we are. They haven't lost since.
Yeah, and shout out Gunna.
Yes, the moment we learned about Gunna, John.
Yep. The moment I learned about Gunna.
And
you too.
Thank you.
Andrew knew Gunna.
I don't know. You're right. No. He didn't.
Who Gunna is? Yes. scoreboard update. The Heat won. They beat the Nets.
Ah.
They beat Adebayo at the buzzer.
Seriously?
Yeah. Nets were up 105-101, 107-101 with 2 minutes left, and the Heat went on an 8-0 run to end the game.
I mean, fuck Brooklyn, but come
well,
on.
Well, just
man.
Before I get to producer corner, does the KD injury, like, does that factor into you guys? Like, the whole thing of if Brooklyn's healthy.
We talked.
I know you talked about it, yeah. But now I see that this is what their playoff roster might look like.
I mean, the lack of cohesion is going to be really fascinating for how they approach it. I think Harden is probably their most important player by this point, but mm-hmm. I just want to quickly dance on the grave of Tyler Herro because a game after being just absolutely atrocious against Minnesota, even in this win, went 4 of 13 for 9 points.
It's not what you want.
You know, obviously 6 assists, 4 rebounds is a plus minus of only -4. And I say only because other guys clearly did. Oh, no, he was among the worst. So that's just amusing to me.
But well, here's why the Herro thing matters to the Knicks. And I'm not getting us. We'll save this for another time. But like he's the trade centerpiece in the Beal trade that everybody assuming Oladipo does not work out and they don't want to re-sign Oladipo. If they're going after Beal, it's Herro is the carrot because they don't have the picks. So if Herro is not that level of prospect, well, you're shaking your head, Jeremy. You don't.
I agree with what you're saying, but I don't see them as a competitor for Beal at all. Like
you don't think period. They would go. You don't think they would be in on Beal?
Oh, I think they would be in on Beal. I have
from the money perspective.
I don't think the Wizards would have. No, not even from the money perspective. I don't think the Wizards would have any interest in trading Bradley Beal to a division rival for like.
I don't think they give
no
a fuck
real
about
good
that.
Picks if, and. If and Tyler the fact that Herro is not going to be a good player?
If Tyler Herro had built on his performance in the bubble instead of making us all realize that the bubble was an anomaly, then he could have been a centerpiece for that sort of trade.
I see it as he would have been a very good option, but you know, I think the Heat could be outbid very easily, even if Tyler Herro is productive.
Well, we'll have the... Maybe we will, maybe we won't have the Bradley Beal trade conversation. But I, in short, I think the Knicks are going to be in good position if and when that happens.
Convo for the summer. So yeah. Producer corner. So LaMarcus Aldridge this week stunned the basketball world by retiring after a irregular heartbeat during a basketball game, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So first off, just shout out to him. Hope he is able to live some type of normalcy going forward. A safe and peaceful time in retirement.
Yes.
It did spark some conversation on a website called Twitter.com in two different directions. And so did the retirement of one Julian Edelman of the New England Patriots, of whether said player is a Hall of Famer or not. And I will start with this because it actually started two conversations. The first being, who is a player that gets talked about or mentioned as a possible Hall of Famer that drives either of you crazy because he shouldn't be?
Jeremy, do you want to go first or I'll go first?
I think the hard part about the NBA is so many guys get into the Basketball Hall of Fame.
That's
where it's like, it's really hard to find a player who doesn't make it. Baseball is much more selective, even football. I think even hockey as well. Basketball is just like, oh, you did very well as a pro, or like you were part of a national team in the Olympics, internationally, whatever it might be. Congratulations. You're free to come in. There's so many other ways to get included in the NBA Hall of Fame. to the point where...
Hold on, it's not the NBA Hall of Fame.
It's right, it's a basketball Hall of Fame, which, so it's FIBA, it's everything you could imagine. So whenever I hear like, oh, this guy doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame, the basketball Hall of Fame, it's like, well, they're going to get in anyway because they just, they admit a lot of guys. And like, I was looking through this list of players thinking for this prompt of how can I find someone who's really good, but not good enough to make it. And I couldn't do it. Like, I thought maybe Jimmy Butler, but his achievements and his, even his Olympic medal, like that's enough to carry him over. And the one player I got to where I'm like, maybe, like, I don't even think they're talked about as a Hall of Fame player very much, but who comes the closest is one of my personal favorite players, Mike Conley. I mean, Conley was an all-star this past year, an all-defensive second team once, NBA teammate of the year. Okay, that's cool. But then we're talking about three-time sportsmanship award.
It's not a real thing.
Well, it is. Apparently, man. It is. First team All Big Ten, McDonald's All American,
third team KFS
Parade All American. Well, thank you. But again, like,
you're in the Hall of Fame now, buddy. Congratulations.
Thank you. But like, this is the type of resume we're talking about, where this is a player who wouldn't get in, but all it takes is a title, more All-Star appearances, one-third All-NBA appearance, like things like that, where a lot of the guys, especially because a lot of these players are younger, so it's, how do we discount that when they have so much more potential?
Jeremy, I'm not asking you to say, will they get in? I'm asking to you personally, are they a Hall of Famer? They've let a lot of guys in the Hall of Fame that I wouldn't, because you know how picky my standards are.
But... in that case, I'll say Paul George.
Okay.
There you go. Oh,
wow. That's a take. So... I'm going to, Jeremy put it very well. It's impossible to answer the question because so many guys get in who, if we had, I think our personal druthers would not be Hall of Famers. You know, it's just, it's the hall of very good in basketball. It's not the Hall of Fame. That said, so I'm going to answer the question like in two ways. The guy who I think will probably wind up getting in that I don't think should get in even by the lesser standards of this hall is Rajon Rondo. I think he's going to probably get in, and I don't think he's a Hall of Famer because I think he benefited from being part of a very good core early on. He had a couple of really, really nice years, and then he went on to be somewhere between a nothing impact player and an actively detrimental one when he was like actively eschewing shooting for a very long time. And then he won a championship as a backup of the Lakers, and he was important on that team. But the answer that I'll give for if this was actually a Hall of Fame, the guy who I don't think should make it, and he, to be clear, he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, and based on the standards, he should be. But if I had, again, my druthers, is Vince Carter. Vince Carter is a 8-time All-Star. Several of those appearances were when he was voted in by the fans because he was Vince Carter when he did not deserve to be an All-Star. Later in his career, he was in the, I would say, the top 10 of the NBA conversation maybe once. He got 1 year where he was 10th in MVP balloting. He made All-NBA second team 1 year. He made All-NBA third team 1 year. I would argue that he was never definitively a top 10 player in the league, and with the exception of a couple of years, was never a top 15 player. And I think anytime you talk about a guy who his most memorable moment in the league by far, and it's not close, came during an event that was not a NBA game, speaks volumes. So Vince Carter is my answer.
Well said. Mine is Joakim Noah. And if I hear one more person tell me he's Dikembe Mutombo, I'm just going to give up talking about this altogether. So
that's a good answer.
The other part of LaMarcus Aldridge, because his career was cut short due to injury. This conversation gets talked about a lot, maybe like once a dead Wednesday in NBA Twitter. But his career was cut short due to injury, and a lot of players are affected by injury. I think Derrick Rose is an easy answer here, but who is the player specifically? Let's keep it Knicks. Like, if you had a do-over for their career, but it was injury-free, and it's the Knicks, who would you want it to be?
That caveat was not mentioned in the prompt.
If you want to go regular, and then if you can think of a Nick, go ahead.
I got two. The answer, I took it the same as Jeremy. I'll say the first name that came to my mind when I read the prompt, which is Brandon Roy, because I feel like Brandon Roy had a game, the type of game that just was fit perfectly with where the NBA was going. He just looked like he had it, whatever it is. And I will also say the first name that came to my mind when you talk about Nick, even though injuries, I don't. Well, actually, I was going to say injuries didn't affect the fact that he did not spend a ton of time as a Knick. Then again, he was hurt early in his career as a Knick. The guy I'm talking about is Danilo Gallinari. And would he still probably have gotten traded in the Melo trade? Yeah, I would imagine he probably would have. But he did have some early injury issues, and I wonder how much that factored into their decision to, you know, include him in that trade and not wait. But I'll always wonder what Gallo's career would have been like had he never had all – and he had a lot of injury issues. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Jeremy?
I was also going to say Brandon Roy.
That's a good answer then.
I'll take it in a different direction since you had it. I'm actually going to go with Reggie Lewis of Boston. I mean,
talk about a what if.
Yeah, you could say Len Bias as well, but Len Bias's career never started, unfortunately, before. I mean, it ended before it really started. But with Reggie Lewis, he actually died at my college. That's where he was practicing in the off season, and I, for a journalism class, was fortunate enough when I was there to write about him, you know, and interview people, and it was a really great experience. But the fact is that this was an incredibly promising player who meant so much to the Boston community. I mean, he went to BU, he wanted to be a Celtic, and, you know, injuries, he had issues with his heart, and of course there's talk of substance abuse that could have exacerbated that, and it led to him passing. So I think just even from the injury standpoint before the more macabre situation, I would go far as saying him after Brandon Roy. In terms of Knicks, that's one.
You want to just point out the, I mean, Bernard King's the most obvious.
Yeah, I think.
In the history. I mean, maybe not the most obvious what if injury history in the history of the league, but like, he's got to be in the top five.
Well, my memory is a little hazy here because I was not alive yet, and I can't quite remember. I mean, you guys were barely alive. Andrew wasn't alive.
I certainly wasn't watching basketball.
But in terms of King's impact on how the frozen envelope lottery went.
Yeah, so...
What does that change the course? Do the Knicks still get Ewing? I mean, I'm not sure, but kind of... Was he still on the team at that? I'm honestly blanking at the moment.
He was. So Bernard King, Ewing was a rookie in 85. So Bernard King missed that entire year. He played six games the following year. I don't know off the top of my head if those were with Ewing or without Ewing. But the 84-85 season, he played 55 games. He led the league in scoring. And for our purposes here, the Knicks were, hold on, pulling it up right now. Cause there were, that pick was not traded. I know that. So like the Knicks earned that pick. Like that was not somebody else's pick. Yeah. The Knicks finished 24-58 with Bernard King playing still 55 games. Did it influence it? Yes, it influenced it because of, I think, when the injury occurred. The injury occurred during that year. So maybe we don't get Ewing. But it's an interesting question.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this to be more niche, I guess, in terms of at least what I've seen. I think Gallo is a great example. I think Amari could work, but I'll say I was going to say Rasheed Wallace. At least if we're talking about Knicks careers where she'd meant, I thought, so much to that team, and seeing him go down with the injury, especially after Ball Don't Lie, and the defensive impact, the veteran presence that he had, he was able to do things from the bench, but his on-court presence, it reverberated through the entire team. So him not being there, I think, was an unfortunate factor. And yeah, I mean, there's so many what ifs with that 2012-13 season. We don't have to go down the rabbit hole of what it is, but that would have been one of the nicer pieces to see him towards the end of his career really clicking with the team and not being injured.
I agree. Mine, NBA-wise, is currently on the Knicks, and it's Derrick Rose, because I think that's what's going to keep him out of the Hall of Fame. I understand he won an MVP with, you know, before he got the significant injuries. But yeah, I would have loved to see what a 10-year prime of MVP Rose looks like. And My Nick, it's sentimental, but I would like to have seen what the 2000s look like if Allen Houston doesn't get hurt, because the conversation around him probably is different. It's mostly he got Scott Layden to give him an insane contract, and the Knicks overpaid and went into the dumps for the decade. And I think if he's healthy, at least he's remembered a little bit better and less about the overpay of a contract. But
so, sorry, just to go back to King for a second.
Go ahead.
They were great points all around. They were 19-36 with King in the lineup. He started. I don't think he missed a game before he tore his ACL. Tore his ACL in March of that year. So there's a chance they still would have won the Ewing lottery if King, even after King, if King had not torn his ACL, because they were just bad that year.
The odds were flat. Because it was just
everybody
in an envelope.
The odds were flat. If you did not make the playoffs, which they were not making the playoffs that year.
Yeah.
So, I guess they would have still won the lottery.
If we're to believe what we believe, then yes.
Yes.
Which I believe.
They missed
the playoffs, they win the lottery.
Yeah. That was my point.
Haven't moved up since.
No, maybe this won't be the year, because maybe they won't be in the lottery. Oh, Jesus. It's been quite a day. All right.
The Mavs pick. Fingers crossed there.
Listen, could you imagine if the Knicks were like a 4 seed and the Mavs were the 7 and they lost both games in the play-in and it moved up?
I think our podcast would just be us screaming.
Yes,
there would be nothing coherent.
Oh my God!
Available. It'd just be loud noises.
It'd be Brandon Marshall mixed with Godzilla yelling at King Kong.
All right, this has been fun. And Jeremy, anything to plug before we get out of here?
No, that'll be all for me.
Okay, Andrew, anything I'm forgetting to plug?
Yeah, I'm gonna plug. Jeremy is making his debut on the Post Game Pod this Tuesday, after the Knicks play Charlotte. So everybody tune in. The one and only coincidence will be navigating through a win number 7, if I can be a little stitious on here, after the Charlotte game.
I'm excited. Well,
thank you. And actually, you know what? I will plug. We've got great merch, if you can tell.
I love that.
You can find it in different colors. Like me, I love the color blue. It brings out my baby blue eyes. Highlights my eyelashes. It just makes all my best features look nicer, and it can make your best features look nicer too, or it can make your worst features look nicer, whatever you feel is about your thing. So go ahead, hit that link, 5 stars, thumbs up, subscribe, thumbs up
for your boys,
whatever you want to do.
KFS merch, it'll make you look good if you're ugly.
That's a logo. That's a slogan.
That is our slogan. Maybe not our slogan, but it's a slogan.
Not even true. It won't help you if you're ugly. You're fucked. Okay. Thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode of the Knicks Film School Podcast. No, we love ugly people here, especially you, listener. I forgot what I was saying.
Stop digging. Stop digging.
Just wrap up. We'll see you
soon. Goodbye. Have a great rest of your week.